Clubhouse.
Hi, this is Mike from Pop Culture Review.
This is Caroline from Daily Review.
And this is Without a Paddle, the Schitt's Creek podcast. This week we are talking about episode 3 of season 6, The Job Interview.
This season is feeling so much like Stevie's story to me that I wanted to get your take on that. Do you feel like we're really going to deep dive on Stevie?
We are deep diving on Stevie. I think this season is Stevie's what comes next, Johnny's what comes next, and Patrick and David's wedding. That is what this season is about. It's starting to reveal.
It just feels like character development wise, it's like we're finally going to find out what makes Stevie tick. Because like we were talking about this last week and it was like, I just can't imagine Stevie in any other profession or any role at all. Like what other job would she possibly have? I'm kind of wondering if we're going to play a little game here with her of like trying on different hats. Like, is this going to be sort of like a gimmick where like each week she goes on some sort of interview or decides she's going to try some sort of whatever and we're going to see her get like pretty far into that and then decide like, I'm not so sure.
I thought of you a lot while I was watching this episode because I felt like this was the show staring through the screen to you. This is what Stevie is going to do, because the last two episodes we have talked about, because, you know, I've been harping on the whole Stevie aspect as my favorite part of the first two episodes of the season. You've been asking, like, what job could you possibly see her doing? I think this episode proves Stevie is kind of spitballing, you know? Larry Ayer seemed like she gets to see the world and be a flight attendant. Stevie is probably the last person I would think of as a flight attendant.
I completely agree. I was trying to think about Stevie in terms of things like leading a group and like being like in charge of our safety or being in charge of our comfort, our, you know, like service kind of part. There's literally no part of the job that feels like this is a good match.
Unless their outfit involves some kind of flannel. I just can't see her.
Oh my gosh, you're so right.
Tending to people's needs, you know, annoying people, pushing the button on Larry Ayer. Though, I guess for any airline, if she's going to work for an airline, something called Larry Ayer is going to be that airline, right?
Larry Ayer. That it is like the most Schitt's Creek airline I've ever heard. So funny. Oh, killing me.
I have to make a correction from last week.
Oh, please go ahead.
Give me
editor's note. Okay.
Yes. So after the episode published and it was out, I was noodling around with Schitt's Creek and I realized Jordan Canning, who directed last week's episode, The Incident, we referred to in the podcast as Jordan Canning him. And Jordan Canning, as it turns out, is a woman, which I should have actually known more. We recorded it. So I want to, one, make that correction. Jordan Canning is a woman. Very extensive IMDb page. And I was actually even pleased to know she actually directed one of my favorite episodes from season 5. Do you want to take a guess what episode she directed?
Season 5? Is it the one where the parents meet?
It is. She directed Meet the Parents.
Oh, nice.
She is someone that we should obviously know the name of. And this was actually her 8th episode. Last week's The Incident was her 8th episode directing.
Oh, wow.
She directed actually 7 of last year's of season 5's episodes. So 7 of the 14? Were there 13 or 14 last year? She was brand new to the show, but she jumped in with both feet last year. Really made her mark on the season. Very much apologize for misgendering her.
Absolutely. Credit where credit is due, Miss Jordan.
Learning from that, I actually went and I made sure to see who we were talking about this week. So this week's episode of The Job Interview was written by Michael Short and directed by Andrew Cividino. Both longtime Schitt's Creekers. Michael Short has actually written, this was his 11th episode, and he has been with the show since the beginning. He's been writing for the show since 2015, and in fact wrote Don't Worry, It's His Sister.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is one of my favorite episodes from season 1.
That's awesome. And you know what, Mike? I'm so super happy that our listeners feel comfortable to write into us and let us know like, hey, you know, this is something that I think that you misspoke on. And we completely welcome that. You guys, we're just people too. And, you know, we're watching TV. And if we miss something or if we even misinterpret something that maybe is happening in the episode and you think it's something different, completely come in and let us know. We ask for kindness and some grace. Like, we're just people. But totally shoot us an email or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Let us know like, hey, I think it went this way. Or, hey, Jordan's a woman. That's super appreciated. And you guys are always welcome to talk to us. We're like those parents who are like, talk to us about anything.
We'll have the talk with you. We'll also talk about drugs. We will do it all.
We will. You just call
social media pages.
Yeah. Mike and I will speak to you in extremely calm voices. Can, you know, offer any type of advice or, you know, take criticism if that's necessary, please. We're here for you.
Do you want to have a good cry session? You could do that.
We're here for
I've
that.
I've always got some tears ready to go. We're here for every. We're here,
are
for
here
listeners.
For this.
Hey, Caroline, do you know where people can listen to Without a Paddle, the Schitt's Creek podcast now, besides at podclubhouse.com?
Is it your mom's house?
Yes. My mom hosts a podcast listening party every week. Everyone's invited.
Oh my God.
She's serving egg salad finger sandwiches. So
oh my God.
She's
delightful.
You know, we are actually available now on all of the major podcast networks. So iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, it's on Stitcher, and you know, we'll be adding more. Find us on iTunes though, leave a review, 5 stars, subscribe, please.
I like your suggested review amount. Just don't just leave like any old amount, like a scattered amount of stars. Just go ahead and leave all 5. Like just leave them. We'll take good care of them. We promise to feed them every night and read stories.
Caroline.
What?
Caroline. They need to leave 5 stars.
Oh, definitely. I think they should.
If they don't leave 5 stars, I'd rather them not leave one at all.
Yeah, I totally get you.
This is like Uber. You got to keep that shit tight or else they don't like it.
Or like being in your 40s as a woman.
Keep that shit tight
or just go home.
Try being a singleton at a wedding at 42. It's not easy, girl. It's not easy.
Yeah, you might have it.
So, but I want to talk about Andrew Cipollino because Andrew is new to Schitt's Creek. This is his 3rd episode directing. He directed Life is a Cabaret from last year.
Oh, wow.
He also directed the holiday special that Schitt's Creek did, Merry Christmas, Johnny Rose.
Oh, man. So he is like all about the musical numbers. He knows how to do those, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, maybe
it's a little step out compared to those two.
He's expanding his horizon, you know?
I appreciate that. Wait, you know what? Wait. Here's my connective thread. In all of those episodes, including this one, we have a character who has like an epiphany. Like in the Christmas episode, Johnny realizes that the way that they celebrated Christmas in the past, while grand, was not actually very loving and his family wasn't actually together. Life is a Cabaret, we have Stevie realize she wants to do more and she actually has this talent in her, like this big epiphany of this character.
You are that meme. It's actually a gif of the guy with the red strings.
Yes.
You know, who's like touching his head and you're just making connections.
Yes. Do you have a webcam? Can you see my red string? This is awkward.
I'd rather not say what cams I do or do not have and what strings I have and have not seen.
Oh, wow. But
I want to jump in tonight with maybe the lightest, most fun of the 3 real main plot points tonight. I want to talk about Alexis and Ted because we got to see Ted finally
this season. Look at him all tan and he's got like must hair and everything. Looking good, Ted.
He is so jacked. When he returned to the show, you know, he was riding the motorcycle and he had clearly kind of bulked up and fitnessed out. He's never really lost that, but you add a tan to it. Yeah,
and must hair like that, like, oh, I just kind of, yeah. Not messed up hair. Must hair. That's a totally different, like, that's like where I ran my fingers through it and kind of, you know, made it a little bit, you know.
That's post-sex hair. Isn't that what we're talking about?
That's why I'm drawn to it. You really hit the nail on the head there, man. The hair head.
It's their anniversary and Alexis and Ted are having some anniversary blues because they haven't spoken to each other in 8 days. Ted is just returning from an extended, what'd she call it?
It's like a research?
It was a research trip. I think she called it something like a field trip or something like that. Like a nature field trip. He was out in the field away from, he didn't have Wi-Fi like he had planned to. So, and these two motherfuckers are randy. They are both horned up. Did you pick up that vibe?
Oh, yeah. I thought that whole scene was hilarious. David stole the scene for me completely.
Coming in and just being completely grossed out. She was about to start stripping.
Oh, yeah.
Webcam.
Yeah. Thank God he came in right when he did.
Thank God. I disagree with that sentiment 100%. I feel
I just mean things would have only gotten like a whole lot more awkward.
I'm not saying that I was leaning closer to my television screen, but I was definitely leaning closer to my television screen.
Oh, you needed to see what Annie Murphy was working with there?
Yeah, well, more confirmation, I guess.
Well, sure. you'll have to watch the Schitt's Creek After Hours show.
Isn't that the best part of like Big Brother? Did you ever watch Big Brother?
Yeah. Yeah, when they're all just like rolling around in the bed, or they'll show you the night vision version of Survivor and you can like see people's hands kind of just scooting across the bamboo platform. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's like legitimized porn. Like, it's fine. You're just watching a network show. It's fine. Yeah.
This is art. This is someone's artistic vision.
You're just seeing what they're doing when they're, you know, thinking no one's looking.
Yeah. The best part of Truman Show are the outtakes where we got to watch Jim Carrey fuck. That's the best part of Truman Show.
What?
It's voyeurism. I made that up. That did not happen.
Oh, God. I was like, I did not see that footage. Jesus.
Somebody stop me. No, we did not get to see that. That was... Also not Truman Show, that was the mess. Yeah. But come on, I really also liked how Skype porn session got aborted because it wasn't just David. This is when Schitt's Creek goes sitcom-y, and I like it. I think it works for the show, where all of the family members start pouring into the room. Who do you think had the best line of the three?
David, absolutely, without a doubt.
Not Moira? Nope. Not Moira's never put your body on the internet without proper lighting?
Nope.
I thought you would, come on.
That's not, you, no. Although I know, of course I wrote that down, but no. It's when Alexis goes, you guys get out of here. I want to finish off with Ted. And he goes, sick. Like that.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
When he said sick and the face that he made, oh my God. I rewound it like four times because that was so funny. He's like, sick. It was really funny.
I'm sure someone by the time this has come out will already have gifted. Someone please send it to us so we have that for our collection. By the way, Caroline, did you see that someone sent you the burping sound from that we talked about in the last week?
I was so freaking thrilled. I was like, I cannot believe someone found this exact little tiny clip. Well, I can believe it because Schitt's Creek fans are the best. They found it in about 30 seconds after we dropped it. I was like, wow, thank you so much for finding this little thing. I think it is so freaking funny. You hadn't actually or didn't remember that exact clip, right? And so then when you actually heard it from out of his mouth.
The face that he makes right after making the sound where he like sticks barfs. His tongue out and got the barfs, that was actually much more emblazoned in my mind than the sound, sound.
Shut up.
As a gift, totally works. It is, I mean, he's a master of facial expressions, and that is some of his finest work, I think.
So I went out to like lunch today with like my aunt and uncle who don't watch the show, my 93-year-old grandmother, and I may or may not have gone bah! At them. And they were just looking at me like, have you lost your mind? And I was like, let it alone. I didn't lose my mind. It was funny. I tried to be like, there's a show. And then he goes, and they were like, wow, like sit down somewhere.
Did you make the barfing face too afterwards?
I did like the whole thing. And they were just like looking at me like, oh man, Caroline needs to get out more. Like she's lost her mind. It was funny.
Caroline Daly not appreciated in her time. But her time companies.
Well, I said something to my grandma. She goes, I don't really watch, you know, the same shows that you watch or whatever, but I'm just here looking at you. I was like, really thanks funny. For appreciating my grandma. Super funny.
We could spend a lifetime talking about all of like the little quips and lines just because their line delivery, everyone's line delivery on Schitt's Creek is as good, if not better than even the lines themselves. The episode starts off, Ted is all jacked up because he's really excited about the new fly species they found. It was the new breed of fly that mates with itself. Did you catch Alexis's response?
She goes, yummy.
Yummy. She was... Obviously, she does not care about this, but she is so happy to be talking to him that she gives the most enthusiastic yummy to me.
Okay, well, let me give you like a little, like, I don't know if everyone does this, but this is definitely like a girl thing, I think. It's like, if you have gotten your little self ready for what she wants to do here on this webcam, she's ready for this. Okay, so
she's wound up. She was so, laying on the bed. Yeah.
So when he's talking about the fly and she's like, yummy, like she's trying to ease the conversation into like, well, you know, what else is yummy? Let's just keep easing it.
You know who does not mate with itself?
Exactly. Me. That's what you say. There you go. That's what you say.
There's actually an interesting conversation in this episode with these two, but about these two. So Alexis ends up buying a turtle, not a tortoise, which she gets scolded by Ted a little bit for confusing the two. And she names it Ted. When Moira sees it, she is not happy. She goes in the freak out Moira mode about, and Alexis says that she believes the key to a long distance relationship is shared experience. Moira very much disagrees and says that the secret to her and Johnny's success for so many years is that they have as little as possible in common, so that when they meet up together, they're always surprised by what they have to
talk
about.
They're astonished.
What was your take on that? Shared experiences is the key to a long-term relationship or any relationship, or barely speaking to each other so that it's always fresh and new when you get together?
Well, she didn't say barely speaking together. She just said having nothing in common.
Yes, as little in common as possible.
I wrote down the same stuff because I was going to ask you. I was going to be like, what do you think about this? I'm going to lean into the camp of the shared experiences. I'm going to say, I don't think that you could go very long with somebody you don't have anything in common with. I'm pretty good at small talk in terms of like, someone could be telling me about something that is so A, not something I'm interested in, and B, something I don't agree with or whatever. And I can keep going and being like, really? That's okay. Tell me more about that. Like I can go for a long time, but
that's what she said.
Nice. But there would be a point when like that can't actually develop into like a relationship that I have feelings for the other person. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to, the only way that that's going to actually get to that point is having something that you actually bond over. You say, you know, I like that too, or whatever. I don't think you could perpetually go with things that you do not have in common. I think that would get dicey pretty quick. Or someone would just be putting on a front, like, for a really long time. When they just decide they can't do it anymore, then it wouldn't work anymore, like, real quick.
If your interest level has nothing to do with what they're talking about, you will yes them to death and smile and nod at all the appropriate times as a practiced person can do, and then not remember any part of that once that conversation ends.
Well, see, I can do that. And I can you do that?
Yes.
Okay, but there's a lot of people out there who cannot do that. They're only like 2 seconds in. If it isn't something that they are deeply interested in, they just kind of wander away or whatever. Like, I know a variety of people who say, I can't stand small talk. I won't do small talk. I'm not going to talk to somebody about the weather or whatever. Like, I'm kind of like, don't you have to like do small talk until you hit something that you have in common? And then that's like when you can get into better talk. But like, if you don't do that first initial poking around of like, what is it that we have in common? How do you ever get to that common thing? So are you on the shared experience side, or are you?
I am on the shared experience side. I'm for sure. I think you need to have not all the same, maybe not even a lot of the same, but I think you have to have a core of shared experience, interests, because I think those are all signs of compatibility. You know, if you are a long distance runner vegan and you are sharing a bed with, getting married to, dating for a long time, a morbidly obese, couch sitting, steak eating 3 times a day with ribs and hamburgers in between person, that is not a relationship that is going to last. It can't.
I wouldn't think it would.
They're too divergent. There needs to be some common ground. So I think shared experiences is an important part.
And here's the thing. I'm going to even like differentiate that a little bit more. So there's one thing about like having things in common. Like, we could both be vegan, right? But saying having shared experiences, like we both go together to a vegan restaurant and actually experience that together, have memories about that together. And then that's where we draw our strength, is from actually going and having the shared experience. It makes me remember that episode when she says that they're taking Fridays off and they're having these like dates. I think that's what makes their relationship strong, because they actually have those moments. And whether they both enjoy whatever that activity was and decide that they have it in common, or whether they have the same reaction to the activity. Like, I can't imagine that Alexis really enjoys, what were they going to go do, like zip line or something like that, or rock climb or do something, hike, whatever. It doesn't exactly match her, but the fact that she was willing to go have that experience, where like no doubt she's gonna have an awkward moment and they're gonna laugh about it, or he's gonna like catch her or help her or whatever. It doesn't matter if at the end he says, I love ziplining, and she says, I hate ziplining. So they don't have it in common, but they had a shared experience that they can like look back on and laugh at, talk about, and like that's what makes them so strong. So I think Moira's crazy.
I think Moira's greatest relationship is with herself.
Ooh, I know you're pretty and her like wigs. Not thrilled with Moira. Is that correct?
She's my least favorite character on the show. I find her very funny. I find her barbs to be cutting, and they make me laugh. But as a person, I would never want to spend any amount of time with Moira Rose ever. I would be roommates with any character on the show except for Roland and Moira. I have no bandwidth for them as people. Part of what I was talking about, I think last week, I think it was, you know, I think for on purpose or just neglect, I feel like she has grown the least of any character on the show. I think she's grown less than Roland has.
Like, what characteristic do you think that both like Roland and Moira share? If you had to like distill them down, what is a shared characteristic that actually makes them unlikable?
Their narcissism.
I like it. I'm going to go with a lack of self-awareness. Both of them don't get how they affect other people. They don't...
How they come off to the world.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. So I think that any character that's like that is going to be somebody who's I'm going to be put off from, because those people are... They have a myriad of other traits that come with that. But at the end of the day, it's just... You've no self-awareness. That makes you very difficult to be around.
I find her to be one of the funniest characters on the show. Her line, Johnny told me I literally had no choice but to come. Like, those kinds of things are hysterical and they make me laugh. And I appreciate the snarky humor. But separate from that, as a person, the reason those lines are so funny is because she sincerely means them.
That's right. And she means no harm to the person. Like, she's saying a very accurate statement. She just so doesn't get how it comes off to other people.
You know, the manifestation of when she tells Alexis last week that she doesn't think Alexis could ever possibly capture her tone and cadence and quips. You know, she's right. No one, it's not a disdain. No one is as unaware of other human beings as Moira Rose.
Yeah, completely. It reminds me of the episode when Alexis is sick. Moira is actually trying to talk Johnny into not going in there and bringing juice to
actively.
Her. But she doesn't know how she's coming off to Johnny at all. Like, she doesn't even recognize how absolutely cold and just not maternal that she's coming off. Like, Johnny's face, though, is all of our faces. Like, you don't, like, what are you saying? If you could hear yourself and really understand what you're saying, you would be appalled. But I know you can't. And so, therefore, right. I still love you because right. you just are so in your own head. Like, you just have right. no idea what's happening.
For sure. Why he said that he'll fix the latches on the screen yes. door closet, on the accordion closet. Because he knows it's going to happen again. He knows she will live there again for some amount of time.
For sure. Hey, let me.
Love that scene you brought up when Alexis was sick. No, I don't need to cut you off, but she tries to get David to leave the room. And his reaction is priceless. He's like, I'm already in here. I've already been in here with her sick. Just mm-hmm. hasn't, again, they have no time for it. Like, it's just who she is. They are fine with it. There was no bait and switch. There was no, they woke up one day and, man, mom is different than she used to be. This is how she, for sure, has always been.
Do you think that somebody in the writing staff or something has like some sort of need to set people straight about the idea of turtles being pets? Because there were so many lines.
You think there was an agenda? You think someone has a turtle agenda?
Well, let me just
staff?
Tell you, follow me on this. She buys the turtle, Moira comes in and lists off the all the diseases and whatnot, or the concerns that she has about a pet turtle. And she says, turtles do not a pet make. So yes. It's like, listen up, right? Then she goes on to Twyla, and Twyla is uncharacteristically stern at parts. I know it's not, it's like
you didn't
stern.
You think that had more to do with the turtle being lost inside her food establishment?
But she says this, the way she delivers the line, go back and watch this. She goes, and you know, if this makes you feel better, turtles actually thrive out of captivity. But she raises her eyebrows in like a, do you got that? Did you write that down? Kind of way. That's like, okay, it's over and over again where it's like, we just got dropped off like a book report on turtles. That was a lot of turtle information and like a lot of finger wagging about like turtles aren't pets, turtles can make you sick, turtles do better outside of a cage. Who tried to get a turtle this week and got like smackdown on this?
No, I think you're right. I think there was a lot of shade being thrown.
They were very hashtag
turtles.
Team turtle in the wild. And then the Galapagos yes. Islands. I mean, please, we're going to study tortoises. Like, there's a heavy hand on the love of the turtle tortoise world. Someone's got a yeah. fixation on them.
You Schitt's Creek fan, set your turtles.
Yeah.
Don't keep them in captivity.
How are we you a Schitt's Creek fan and have a turtle at this point after you watch this episode? I don't know. You will have to let him go.
Did it possibly make you fall in love with Alexis a little bit more that she's leaving the shreds of lettuce coming out of the bathroom telling Ted the turtle that at dinner time?
I did. When, yes.
You
yes,
know,
yes.
she's leaving it.
And she has the little breadcrumbs version with the lettuce. Yeah. I thought that was cute. Although one of the moments that, again, just like tying the characters together so well that made me love Alexis just because she's funny. She's asking Twyla to call if she sees the turtle. And Twyla goes, you must be joking. And she goes, you too, girl. Like, and she just like a yeah. kiss. That's so Moira Jr. You know, it's
yeah.
like,
yes.
I'm not even aware of how I affected your business just now or
yeah.
you or anything. It's super funny.
But I'll tell you the difference, though. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think Alexis is the most inclined to be Moira Jr. Now, you think it would be David, because David definitely grew up as like the person that Moira will dress up in clothes and parade around.
Yes.
Like, they were always the mommy-son relationship. But Alexis, in personality, is the most likely to be like Moira. And while she can be completely immune to how she comes off to other human beings and how she's just kind of ignorant that other humans are around, she is not that way with her loved one.
Okay.
And I think Alexis is pretty consistent for being aware of the people she loves. Even if it doesn't suit her need. You know, I think that she's putting all the effort that she's putting into the Ted relationship. Do you think Alexis has ever put as much effort into a relationship and tried to have a shared experience with a relationship like she is trying with Ted, that she went out and bought a turtle? Do you think Alexis Rose before Schitt's Creek ever would have touched a turtle?
No. No.
But fast forward 3 years at the creek, you know, she's out there buying a tank and she's trying to coax turtles with lettuce.
Oh.
She's looking all over town for her turtle.
Mike, do you know what that just made me think of when you said that, like, she's changed and, like, at the creek, how you said that? That makes me feel very baptismal. Like, they had to go to the creek and now they're, like, reborn new people.
I mean, water is often related dream interpretation with rebirth and baptism
and stories, just storytelling in general. Like, whoa. Sure. I'm sorry if you already got that, good on all of you guys, but I didn't get that. I didn't think about that.
Well, we're here, people. We're blowing your shit up.
Or I'm just like having epiphanies. As I said, that happens in these episodes that those particular people are involved with.
Andrew Spadino is,
I know, full circle.
Or directing for you. Directing for you. I actually never picked up on that either, but that is a great pickup. And you can even probably take it a step further to Smoke Signal, the season premiere. Johnny is the one who gets in the water in his birthday suit and emerges from there. And he emerges from there and then begins trying to build the Rosebud Motel. He's on this whole path of actively now doing something after being stuck in gear for so many years on the show of not knowing what plan he was going to follow. Moira did not get in the water. Moira went the other path, continued to choose the same career she's always had, which will cause the same pitfalls in her life that they've always caused. She did not have her rebirth experience.
Amazing. Amazing. The subtleties, people. The subtleties. You just think it's all one-liners, but no. It's deep.
I got to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because you are a people person. You are the person who will talk to people on the airplane. You will talk to them in stores. Strangers.
Correct.
What did you think of Alexis opening the door, finding the driver there, and she, when he says very, very flatly that it's not an abduction, she stares at him and she's judging him. She's using her practice eye on him and says that she believes him because he did not blink. Is that what it takes to convince you that someone is telling you the truth, that they tell you it with their eyes open, no blinking?
Well, shifty eyes or blinking and looking away or whatever is definitely supposed to be a sign of deception. I mean, I would have believed it by all the other clues. You know, is there a limo outside? Like, there you go. There's one. The guy.
Something tells me Alexis I feel like she has been abducted several times.
Yeah, definitely.
And yes, for sure we know that she has spent time tied up in cars. But I make you bet they were all nice cars. Maybe not limos, but in Alexis's world, having a nice car does not preclude abduction.
But having a limo when the guy says I have a limo in Schitt's Creek means I would probably be more inclined to believe what he's talking about.
A limo in Schitt's Creek is damning evidence.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you agree or think that this was like a cute whatever? I don't know. How would you characterize Ted's gesture?
This is something I would have done myself in the same situation. So it very much worked for me. I mean, cheesy or not, this is...
Have you ever actually done something like this or just talked about or thought about?
I've never been to the Galapagos Islands, so that's a little difficult.
No way. Bullshit. Not off the hook for that. Have you ever actually pulled the trigger on a grand gesture versus this is something I think is a good idea and something I would do, meaning like I wouldn't shy away from it, but actually pull the trigger on it? That's the difference between Ted and everybody else. Like he pulled the trigger.
We're talking separate from the wedding in the mansion.
Yeah, I'm talking about a grand gesture.
That's a pretty grand gesture.
No, it's not. That's just a wedding. But like, talk to me about like an actual grand gesture. Because I think most people have never done it.
No, I don't think I have.
Well, that should all be like a life challenge for all of us. We should all find a way to do a grand gesture. And like, not just think about it, not just think like, wow, that would really surprise him or her. That would really be like, that would just blow their socks off. But like, pull the trigger, like actually do it. Have that
and
moment.
And then tell us how it went.
Yeah, I want to hear. I want to hear if a grand gesture's happened to you or if you've truly pulled off a grand gesture. All those people who do shit like flash mobs, tell me how that shit works out.
We will have recorded the next two episodes. So this challenge goes out to people listening on episode 5 of this season. We want to hear from you what grand gesture you have performed since listening to this episode. Step up to the challenge, perform a grand gesture. If we do one ourselves, we will let you know.
Oh, no.
About it.
Not
unlike you done a grand gesture? I should have asked you. Have you ever done a grand gesture?
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. Yes.
Is it something that you want to share with us?
I would say that my parents are actually very good at grand gestures, and not just like to one another, but to us as their kids. When like Christmas morning, it wouldn't just be like a present under the tree, but there would be like a note in my stocking. And then there would be like all this like rigmarole, like this way bigger thing that was like complicated and thought out and stuff. Yeah, absolutely. I did a grand gesture to my kids. They are in love with the show The Middle.
Gave birth to them. gave birth
besides
to them.
That they're in love with the show The Middle, and we wanted to take them on just sort of just like a silly kind of adventure. The grand gesture of it was that I made up a contest that the show was having, and they wrote an essay about how they're the best fans, and they supposedly sent it in. I made a video using like picture clips of the cast and made this whole slideshow about how they won the contest, and now they get to go on this amazing vacation. They were, I mean, the amount of jumping up and down and screaming and everything, like, yeah, that was like a grand gesture of love to them, that like I paid attention to their interest, and I like spent days and days and days like creating this experience for them. And then of course I actually took them on the trip, and they told everyone on the trip that we had won this from The Middle. And every like waitress or gas station attendant was like, congratulations. Like, it was a full immersive. Yeah. So I'm all about it. Like I would definitely say, like, if you've ever, and this is not directed to you, Mike, but just to everyone, if you've ever just thought about it, you should absolutely do it. It is an amazing feeling to see something actually play out, and the joy and the excitement and the anticipation and everything. It is so much fun. Like, grand gestured up, people.
I wasn't thinking about kid grand gestures, but
I know you weren't, but maybe I don't want to share other ones. That's the one I'm willing to share.
But I mean, that's a for sure grand gesture. But I've done a couple of grand gestures, you know, for Tom, my son. In the end, a lot of times with kids, I feel like, you know, you move heaven and earth, you do this thing, and then, or at least with my kid anyway, because he's my kid, you know, like you reveal it, and you know, you give the ta-da. The reaction is like, cool. You know, is it a grand gesture?
Too, that's adults do, yeah. That too. I mean, think of,
is it a grand gesture if you don't get a grand reaction?
That's a Does very good question. Count? Think of Mutt and the bicycle with Alexis. Right? There's a grand gesture that wasn't received the way that he hoped it would. In that case, he actually had to create the grand gesture by teaching her how to ride the bike. Like, that became the grand gesture. His like nurturing of her and patience and everything became the grand gesture, where the bike itself was supposed to be it. And that actually, you know, it morphed into his time and energy and love for her to actually teach her how to do it. And that he listened to her, that he listened that she missed spin class, and that's why he bought it, and all these kinds of, like, I mean, that's incredibly sweet. Yeah. I don't know. I challenge everybody. And I'm putting, you know, in this episode, Stevie and David have a challenge with each other. I will bet you to do a grand gesture.
My favorite Tom grand gesture, I took him out to Comic-Con a couple of years ago, and I spent a lot of time emailing and phone calling to get him some like one-on-one, like selfies and photos with like actors and some Marvel character people that I knew he would like. But the best grand gesture I ever did with him, he has a long drive to school. Well, he doesn't drive, but you know, it takes a while to get to his school because it's in the middle of fucking nowhere. And he often will like doze or nap, you know, especially if we're not talking or if we're not listening to something. And this particular day, it was a Friday, and I was driving him to school, and he dozed off. Or I wasn't driving him to school, but he's, you know, clueless on kind of where he is going. And he woke up, and we were at the airport, and we were flying to Fort Lauderdale because we were getting on a 7-day cruise around the Caribbean. It was like early November. He had no idea. That then actually got a pretty good reaction.
See, that's amazing. I love that.
So that's my favorite grade, because it actually got a decent like reaction of like, wow, because I think he was happy that he didn't have to go to school for a week. But you know, and he was so confused. He woke up and he's like, he had no concept of the time. He was just confused why, you know, he woke up and he wasn't at school. But no, that was pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That's super awesome. Well, I want to hear about grand gestures, like in the upcoming episodes.
Send them, people.
Before the end of this season, I want to hear.
We will read them.
Grand gestures, everyone.
Send us your grand gestures. We will read them on the
including
air.
Including you, Mike. I'm challenging you. I'm challenging everyone who can hear this, which includes you and me. Everybody's got to do
a
grand gesture.
Can I give myself a grand gesture of self-care?
I don't know if that counts.
Can I say to myself one day, be like, Mike, yes, Mike, you can go to bed early and not worry about all of the shit you have to do. And then I will weep with joy at the grand gesture that I have given myself of self-care. Well, does that count?
That sounds like a sad situation, but But okay.
Come on. Come on. If someone
I don't want to count that. That sounds like bullshit. I mean, I'm saying this is like a throwdown. I could get the flight attendant job over you. This is that kind of challenge.
Safe space.
No, it is not. Who told you this was a safe space? They were mistaken.
My feelings are hurt now. I feel attacked.
Oh my God.
You've called my self-care grand gesture bullshit. I'm going to need
you asked if it counted.
Oh, by the way, I would never challenge you if you could be a flight attendant over me.
Because I definitely win.
Because you would definitely win. And B, I would not be a good flight attendant. Because I could fake it, and I fake it very well. Most people I talk to, and I talk to a lot of people every day, I don't like them, and or I don't care. But I fake it well.
You have no friends or anyone who listens to this.
Oh, I'm not talking about my friends. I'm talking about, you know, work people and such. If I had to do that and be treated the way I have seen flight attendants be treated,
you'd lose it on them.
I would be like on first name basis with the air marshal. Like the air marshal would have to talk to me regularly about calming the fuck down.
That's hilarious. That's
not terrible. Even for Larry Air. I don't even think I could be hacking as a Larry.
Well, I think this is the perfect segue to move away from Alexis and Ted and head into Stevie and David. And they have this whole moment where, you know, she's got to figure out her outfit, which I thought was hilarious because she ended up wearing pants and a flannel shirt. Hysterical, what she wears anyway. But then right. That whole thing, the fact that David decides to wear Patrick's clothes, what do you think of that?
I have down here, question for Caroline, did David look like an alien or did he look really good in Patrick's clothes?
Oh no, he looked like he was wearing little boy's clothes. It looked bizarre. I think Patrick looks great in it. But again, right. Patrick's a mystery to me.
That's the magic of this episode. And was there no Patrick in this episode?
No, not at all.
Just mention of his clothes. His clothes made it in the episode.
Right.
But they probably don't need to pay him to be in the episode. It's just his clothes. For they look so good and natural on Patrick. They looked really weird.
I think it was the fit. Like the sleeves were a little short and it was a little tight. And even though
a little tight, it was a little
that's
tight.
That's what made it seem tight. Like he put on little boy's clothes. Like it was like, what are you doing there? It was just so funny. I loved that Stevie was like saying that he could get a job as a youth pastor. That is exactly what he looked like. I was like, ah. Exactly
right. Did you feel that David was being a little too mean to Stevie in this episode? That she wants to do this job interview and he kind of like shoehorns his way into it. Like he was going to take the flight attendant job if it was offered to him anyway. I felt like he was kind of shitting on her parade.
Well, maybe, but it's because you love Stevie so much. I think your eyes might be clouded. So maybe. I think that David and I are in the same boat where we're both like, I don't really get you. Like, this does not fit you as a profession. And this is like really silly. So like, why are you going to go do this? Like every little nugget that she would say, like, well, this is Larry Air, which his line of that sounds like a dollar store perfume. Oh, my God. That's exactly what a dollar store perfume would be called. Larry Air. That's really funny. I just thought that it seemed this is silly. And so he just made a game of it. I'm a better fit for it. That shows you how much you're not a good fit for it. So if you're going to try to find yourself, like, be real, like, this isn't going
to
be it.
If David was behaving the way he was to try and wake her up from something that he thinks is just her being like desperate to do something or try and find some direction, I guess that's fine. I don't know. It didn't really come off to me that way. I think he's just competitive. I think the idea that Stevie thinks that she was genuinely more suited for it than him, I think irked him and you know, got his competitive juices flowing, which I don't know that David is terribly competitive in a lot of things, but it struck me definitely very much that this is the kind of thing that he would think he was super competitive in.
I feel like they're really good friends. And I feel like when you're really good friends, you can look at the other person and be like, you're fucking nuts. Like, this is a terrible idea. And you're not being an asshole. You're just, that's what being friends are. You say, this sucks. Like, what you're doing is stupid. And so when he says, I stand a better chance of getting this job with my skill set than you do because this does not suit you, that's the sentiment. I don't think that that's being shitty. I just think that that's being real and, like, you know, telling it as it is, you know?
I don't know if you caught them, but we see three different slogans for Larry Air. I wanted to know which one you thought was the best or your favorite of them.
Okay, so say them out. Say them out loud for our audience so they know what they are.
So behind the lady giving the interview, the group interview discussion, there are three posters for Larry Air. The first one has a slogan, see the air. Pretty good.
Okay.
You know, see the air. The second one was fly into your future.
Okay.
That one struck me as something that actually might be on an airline poster. The last one is by far my favorite. It was get your fly on.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I would definitely go with Get Your Fly On. I think that's hilarious, sure. And definitely what would match Lear. Although I think that this is one of those times when, if you think about Stevie's like vantage point, she's sitting staring at those things that say things like that. And I think that that's just like fueling our feeling that this is Stevie's, you know, big moment. Like, it's like, fly into your future, get your fly on, get out there, do things, see things. It feels very much like it's like the writing's on the wall, literally. Of like how she's feeling and what she needs to be doing.
Because, you know, at the beginning of the episode, when the bet between them arises, her and David, her explanation for wanting to do Larry Air flight attending was, I don't know what I want to do, but if I'm going to do something, going to see the world or leaving Schitt's Creek doing this, which I got the impression she probably assumes is not a difficult job, but has a great fringe benefit of traveling, is as good a place to start as any. Because again, go back to the conversation with Alexis on the steps. The thing she starts to compliment Alexis about is that Alexis has seen the world, that she has traveled like a free spirit. If Stevie is grasping for ideas on what comes next because she has no idea, she just knows that what she's doing now doesn't work for her, getting to see the air and getting paid for it, you know, getting to see the air, see the world and get paid for it. You can see where that seems like a good idea.
Oh, 100%. And I think that like anytime anyone is like finding themselves, what's the cliche thing they do? Backpack around Europe to find myself. Yeah. I'm going to take a skip year between now and college to go and find myself via travel. 100%. Absolutely agree with you. And that's why I think flight attendant makes sense to her mindset. Not that it makes sense as a job, but the idea that I need to change my scenery and change my surroundings and somehow that is how I'm going to have this moment where I really understand who I am, that totally works. It completely works. And the fact that David doesn't, you know, ultimately get the job and she does feels very much like he's good. He's found himself. He's got Patrick. He's got the store. He's good. And she's the one that needs to get going.
I got to interrupt you for 1 second. Because you said backpacking across Western Europe.
I said Western Europe? Just Europe.
Well, you said Europe, but I'm going to say Western Europe because that is a very famous, ties into a very famous Friends quote. And anytime anything Friends comes up, I need to mention it because
okay.
I love Friends. There was an episode where Ross hasn't had sex in like 6 months. And Joey, he goes to Joey for advice. If you want to know how to have sex, you talk to Joey, right? Did you ever watch Friends?
Oh, yes.
I don't know. We've been friends for quite a while. I don't know what your Friends habit is.
I probably know the majority of scenes and lines, but I would not say I'm near the fan that you are.
West Wing and Friends are probably the two shows I'm probably most well-versed in, like in like really minutiae detail. So Joey's go-to story for trying to get a woman to have sex with him involves a story he has made up and honed over time about backpacking through Barcelona. And there's a detail that starts with, you know, backpacking through Barcelona through the foothills of Mount Tibidabo. And then he goes through this whole thing about how he saw a woman in a waterfall and she was crying and he went and he comforted her and the whole thing. And like by the end of it, he's telling the story to Ross so that Ross can absorb it. And, you know, be able to tell it to a woman so he could get laid. Like, Ross is leaning forward, hands on his chin, wanting to know about this story. Like, he's ready to have sex with Joey at this point. It's just a classic story.
But, so,
it's very effective. So if you are thinking about finding yourself, definitely go backpacking across Barcelona in the foothills of Mount Tibidabo. And maybe you'll have sex.
That's hilarious.
Maybe you'll have sex.
I mean, don't we all feel like we say that cliche line of like, I need to change the scenery,
all the time.
And
all
so for that, I mean, this works as a first try for a job for her. The whole concept works. It's just like, it's so silly to me. Like you said, she's not well suited for this job.
I think you're right. I think we are being set up for an example here where she is going to try different jobs over the course of this final season.
Which I think is funny. I mean, that's a great like gag of the week. She comes in a different uniform, trying different things and like shenanigans happens each week. Like, I'm cool with that. I can handle that.
What is your biggest
See, I would be a total David about this. And this is very factual.
Am I too loyal?
No, I would say I stick with things longer than I probably should. I give so many chances past the point of when I probably should. And that's something that I'm working on myself, is to give myself permission to quit something or let it go earlier than just continuously trying to make it work. That's really my biggest weakness, I feel, very much, because it's something that weighs on my heart if something's not going well, and I'll just keep trying. I will keep trying, like so far past an embarrassing point.
Right, but do you see where that is an admirable quality?
That's why I
also
said I'm like David. I totally think it's an admirable quality, but for my own self, the reality of it doesn't have good consequences when you really get down to like that part when it's like, you should have left. That's not good. And I don't just mean left, but you should have like stopped trying to do that, whatever that task is. Like, it's not going to work out.
It's a recipe for having a hurt heart.
Or recognizing when something doesn't work quick enough so that you can change course. That's an important part of it. I will keep trying.
You would not leave with disorganized and indecisive?
No. No, that let me know and remember that Stevie has never been on a job interview. She's worked at the motel this whole time.
She is a victim of nepotism. Yeah. Nepotism has robbed her of a key life skill.
It's funny to me, though, that like she wouldn't have like even maybe she wouldn't have even known to look online for like questions you might get asked in an interview, because that's a standard one.
Didn't even think about it.
What's your biggest weakness? And are you a David or a Stevie?
No, I'm a David. I've had to answer this question several times in my life. It's usually a version of, because this is true, I'm also well aware that I'm giving an answer that portrays me in a favorable light, what question that is meant to. But I think you're supposed to do that. I mean, I think anyone would advise you to do that. I think no one would advise you to give an honest negative answer.
I don't
about
think
yourself.
So, right.
You know, like I'm a kleptomaniac.
Right, and right.
I murder small
sometimes
animals.
Sometimes I shit my pants.
Stop.
Like that's not the thing to say.
While sitting here, in fact, care too much? That's the answer that would get a groan from someone if you answered that probably in a job interview. But the idea that become maybe irrationally passionate about something that in the grand scheme doesn't matter too almost bordering maybe on like a little OCD, but like even like emotional OCD,
ooh,
where you think through things a little too much, maybe more than it was, you know, maybe someone says something in an offhand way and they completely forget about it because they didn't mean anything by it. It just kind of flew by. Maybe I take that and I internalize it. I'm like, oh, what have I done? Mm-hmm. You know, am I the reason that they feel that?
Oh my gosh. That makes total sense. And I think in a job interview, I really don't know. I would love to know what a job interviewer thinks is the ideal answer to that. That would be so fascinating to me. What is it that they teach them in HR school? What are they looking for us to say? If you're out there and you're in charge of doing interviews, will you please let us know? What is it you're hoping the candidate says?
We are giving listeners a lot of homework. A lot of homework.
Welcome.
We are asking them for grand gestures, HR input.
They're supposed to go rate us on iTunes and give 5 stars.
They've
got a lot of things to do this week.
Yes, for sure.
But for real, aren't you curious?
It only takes 3 seconds, though, to go on iTunes and rate us 5 stars.
Oh my gosh, but aren't you so curious what the hell it is we're supposed to answer? What is the winning answer to that? I'm a workaholic.
I'm too loyal. I'm just going to put down Chad.
That was really funny. Oh my God.
You got to appreciate when this character that you don't know just puts one of our fam here in like its place.
We talked about this the last 2 weeks, but those minor characters who just like knock it out of the park. Like I thought she was really funny. Really funny. Carol was great.
I also found the sass mouth coming off of the loan officer to be fantastic in the Johnny Rose storyline. Johnny is applying for a new loan to buy his motel. Deceased curling a friend that wasn't really a friend's motel.
Right.
Was it in Elmdale? Did we decide? Did they name where that was?
Let's just assume. It's like in a surrounding
town. It has
town,
to be.
Right?
Right. Which only existed, we've discussed.
Only
you know,
Elmdale.
It's the Twilight Zone. It's only Elmdale and then Amish country. And it was not an Amish motel.
Right.
So Johnny is with Roland and they are sitting at Avid Trust. A loan officer played by Leia Dodd comes back and says, you know, the application looks great. It's filled out well. Everything looks good except for the fact that they can't grant the loan because Johnny doesn't have enough assets.
Question. Can I ask you one? Do you think that a businessman with the experience like Johnny has had would not realize that the motel's not in his name and therefore he has no assets?
No, I think he very much knew that. I think he thought he would get more play on a Schitt's Creek adjacent town bank, small town bank, granting a loan. As she puts it, we don't offer faith-based loans, but I 100% believe he thought that was going to be the route that he would be able to get his loan. That his experience and the track record, which he's obviously taking credit for the motel's success,
right,
even though it's not in his name, is proof that Avid Trust should you know, trust him with a 5-6-7 figure loan. I mean, obviously he was he owned video rental stores. He knows how he was not doing that out of cash. He was doing that on loans.
That's although it did bring me back to the time when he tried to go get what, you know, in the States we would consider unemployment, although he was calling it a bunch of different things because they're Canadian. So they weren't actually calling it unemployment. They just kept saying, I have to go get a check. And he goes in, he doesn't understand how the system works. Like, she's like, well, did you pay into unemployment? And he's like, I don't know. So that those parts is like, maybe he really doesn't know what it takes to get a loan because he doesn't seem to know the minutiae of how it works. Like, she was asking a bunch of things and he was like, I don't know. I had people that did that.
Right. Well, yes, that's true. But I also imagine it's probably been a very, 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 very long time since Johnny has had to personally himself, right, go into a bank and ask a loan. I'm sure when he began, you know, Rose Video, he went into a bank and had to talk to someone with a loan, probably at the time when you could go into a bank with not many assets, but with a good business plan and a sweet tongue that could, you know, spin a yarn and get that loan. Like, that was, I mean, he was, that there was a time when you could get loans that way.
Hey, let me ask you. So with Moira, she has shared throughout the episodes, including like her sister coming on, and she has told many a story about how she grew up with no money and she learned how to do all these different tasks and she knew how to make her own bed. She knew how to do all these things. But when I'm trying to think about Johnny's story, I have no idea if he grew up rich. I have no...
He used to work at the button factory, we learned.
When he was 10, that's true. So then he couldn't have grown... Okay, so then his parents couldn't have
been... Well, maybe. I mean, it's possible he had a father who wanted him to learn the value of a dollar and so sent him into the saltpeter mines. Right. At a young age, like the button
factory. But I guess you're right. I mean, there's no way, though. He would have had to go get a loan, though, is the point.
The Roses have always struck me as very new money.
Very.
Well, and no longer money. But for the time that they had money, their art style alone speaks to me of being new money.
Intriguing. You know what completely. I mean? Completely. Not being good at money. Really, honestly, not being good at money is like one, you know?
No. When David is the one who has to voice, and he says it in the most awkward way, so many years ago when Wendy gives him the $40,000 check, he doesn't even know how to phrase the words, really. But he gets across the fight, like, shouldn't we save this money?
Right.
You know, and they're, it's all a foreign concept to them. Like, we have $40,000. We need to go buy, you know, spend $40,001 worth of stuff right
now. Exactly. Yes. You know? Yes. Completely.
Yeah. When he is the voice of reason, I think you're probably in bad shape.
So we asked this last week and I'm going to ask you again. Did we miss the point in time when Roland became such an important part of the motel?
I think they've been silently building it, but no. I feel like he got some kind of off-screen promotion.
Yeah. It does feel that way.
In between seasons. I mean, The last time we really saw Roland with the motel was like around the time that he was running like errands when his kid was born.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that his position within the group was very clearly low man on the totem pole.
He was the handyman. He was like the maintenance guy, but yeah.
And was not asked about his opinions on things or anything like that. So where do you think they're going with this, like prediction-wise? Do you think that Roland is going to continue to be a big part of this? Or will Stevie come back into the fold? Or where are they going with this?
I think Stevie gets out. I think show ends with Stevie Budd not working at the Rosebud Motel any longer.
Is that...
Whether or not she leaves Schitt's Creek, I don't know. But she will not be an employee, is my guess, of the motel when the series ends.
Do you feel that's like a success story for her?
Yes. Okay. I think the lobby room of the motel has been somewhat of a buried alive casket for Stevie for years. And I think anything she ends up doing that's not her being employed at the motel is a win for her.
I would say that the motel lobby was the incubator. It's so much nicer than a casket.
I feel like maybe like a womb, but it's like a womb where you never get born from, or an incubator you never escape from, very easily never escape. I think there are a lot of people, and her Aunt Maureen probably was one of them, who lived and died in that motel.
Well, and they've certainly built it up now when I think about it, because certainly her biggest fear was that she'd become Aunt Maureen, that she'd be at the motel forever, that this was her whole life. And they kind of dropped that, like, you know, that she went and did other stuff and they kind of stopped having her say that every week, you know, And then it was like, it's kind of like creep. Obviously, it's like now that the major story is that she's going to finally like try to do something. So I do think they laid the groundwork for this. I'm just not so sure they laid the groundwork for Roland. And especially the switch between Johnny, like not even being able to handle being around Roland, to this like sitting at the bank together, kind of where they were much more like at ease with each other.
I gotta tell you, yeah.
Like that was, it's.
I'm not okay.
Okay,
with it.
So tell me.
I think I voiced this last week, that Johnny with the motel going to see the Terkstra's motel. Why is Roland there? Why is Johnny having Roland set up that call from his fucking lawnmower? What is going on? You know, but Stevie at that point had not said she wanted out or wasn't sure what she wanted. So why isn't it Stevie and Johnny making these phone calls and doing this thing? It's weird that they had the conversation about we're going to look at a motel to maybe buy when they showed up to it and Stevie didn't know why they were there.
That
runs very counter to the relationship the two of them had set up in the last
season. Right, and that Roland would be in the know, but Stevie wouldn't. Like, it's like, this is so wacky.
And I asked this last week, and now I have to ask it this week, because as it turns out, the Terkstra Motel, we learn, gets sold. Johnny is sad. Moira is sad for Johnny. I don't know how much Moira really cares, but she seems sad for Johnny. But we learn that the shits, Jocelyn and Roland, they were the ones who bought the motel. They are now a foursome in the motel business. I asked this last week, and now I have to ask it. Why would you want to be in business with Roland shit? Jocelyn, I get. But why Roland?
I think in this particular case, they've fallen into business. I mean, the motel got bought out from under them. So it's not like they chose to become partners. They are told we're now partners, that we bought into it.
But also, you hit on this last week, and I think this episode maybe proved you out a little bit. But they were able to secure a loan to buy the motel.
I think, yeah, for sure. They seem like the only people.
Yeah. So, this is what you kind of predicted. As the mayor and the one with the contacts in the town, Roland definitely seems to have actually some cachet about town that he could swing this, or the shits together could swing this. Maybe it's, if you want to do business, you got to do business with the devil.
I think the part,
not that Roland is the devil,
right,
but
I think the part that actually, like, I wish had been played out a little different is when Johnny gave Roland like a hug. I wish a little bit he gave Moira like big eyes, like what just happened, you know?
Yes, what is going on?
Yeah, instead, because the hug,
it's a little too natural.
Yeah, the hug seemed too genuine, like too much like he really loved and appreciated Roland. Whereas Moira goes, if any time called for alcohol, this is it. Like she was still being them before. Like I'm now in business with the shits.
I mean, rarely it doesn't happen, but I would very much with Moira on this one. Like she appreciates the insanity of it all. Johnny is almost acting like a pop person. Like I was not okay with this last week. I am really not okay with it this week. It seems so fucking weird. Like there was some kind of pod person invasion over the summer in between seasons. This it's too bizarre. It's too weird. I don't like it.
I really wonder where it's going to go, because it just happened. Like we didn't have the roses sit and think about it. They didn't decide, okay, they're good people. We're going to go ask them to be in the business. They just went, they bought the business. They came back and they said, hey, we've bought into your business. My like gut reaction was like, no, you bought a motel. If you want to go run that motel, go run it. You know what I mean? My business is the Rosebud Motel, and I was going to expand it by getting a second motel. You don't own a first motel. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't buy into my business. You just bought another motel, you know?
If we forget everything that's come before, which this plot line seems to, Roland is as much an owner of the Rosebud Motel as Johnny is. That's certainly how they're proceeding.
That's true.
Because Johnny doesn't own it. That's why he couldn't
get
a loan.
Well, and here's the weird thing, though. He did say a thing about how what he told the bank loan person was that he is invested in the motel. And she was like,
I think he meant sweat equity. I don't think he meant actual money. He meant I'm invested in the motel because this is how I have decided to spend my days. And so I work there. Everything that he has done to try and elevate the image of the motel, you know, like all that stuff. I think that's the investment he's talking about. He's talking about the sweat equity he has put into making the motel somewhat successful.
Yeah. Well, so you did skip over the Bob line, which was really pretty silly and funny.
Really silly and funny, and kind of sad though also. So when the brain trust is together at the cafe, the idea is that they're going to try and hit up Bob for the cash. because he's been seen wearing the fancy leather jacket and riding a bike, and
and
Gwen has been seen around town in the expensive yoga clothes, and Jocelyn knows because she buys the knockoff of the expensive yoga clothes, and they are also expensive. We actually have that audio clip.
Come to think of it, Gwen has been coming to rehearsal in those fancy yoga clothes. Those are not cheap. I know, because I buy the knockoffs, and they're not cheap.
I really like that whole line, and I liked the knockoff expensive yoga clothes. It seemed like some fun shade towards yoga and the yoga complex in this country, but or Canada too, I guess. But it turns out Bob is kind of going through more of a midlife crisis, because what happened?
Poor Bob. Oh, God. I felt so bad when he was like, Gwen's not coming. And then he totally just lays it all out there. Like, oh, my God, this is what happened. Like, she ended up going off with the pastor after, you know, Bob thought
the
she wanted a bad boy. And
she wanted
Oh, my God. That whole religious experience line, that felt very much like that was supposed to be like for the trailer. And like that, it was just like plunked in there. I was like, okay, that was almost punny, you know, like, okay.
Oh, did you take it as punny? I took it as Bob being aware very much of the double entendre of finding bad boy. Did you get the minister's name? Parson Jim. That's the name of the minister that she ran
off. Okay, should I remember him from something else?
No. It was just such a funny, odd name that she's getting her, you know, her headboard rocked by Parson Jim, you know. It just struck me as really funny.
I think it's funny because it's like they all know each other like on a first name basis. Like, this is a tiny town. Like, she ran off with Jim, you know, Parson Jim.
Yeah, Parson Jim. Parson Jim, please.
That's funny.
Don't you? And I hear Parson, I think of Frosty the Snowman and Parson Brown.
Definitely very also. Parson Brown. Very.
Very That's Parson funny. Brown, who also could rock your world for sure.
He could marry you, but I don't know if he could rock your world.
But this led to a dinner where they were going to try to this is where this all came out, that Gwen has left Bob and she's, you know, chasing a bad boy now. It culminated all at a dinner at the Schitt's house where they were going to try and hit up Bob for money. And it turns out actually Bob hits up Johnny for money because him and Moira have laid this thing where they know the Gateses and they want to invest with like local money, not use the Gates Foundation cash. So Bob actually is looking for a loan himself. But I wanted to ask you, all of that stuff, the thing I cared about most was sloppy Jocelyn.
Oh, I totally heard the sloppy.
Yes or no?
Yes, I think that's hilarious. And if I made those, I would call them sloppy Carolines for sure.
I got to tell you, I'm probably actually older than her, or we're about the same age. I find Jocelyn oddly sexually compelling.
Well, because she has like
very much
of overt talk about it. Like, she's like definitely like, oh yeah, like we get down.
You get down. But she's a kind of a way like she's like has this whole like MILF image of herself.
Oh yeah. About the she felt bad for them because she's like so hot and they have to like look at her. Yeah.
Like, and I took when she says sloppy Jocelyn and she's kind of bending over when she says it. It was a loaded sexual line, or at least I took it that way. It's possible I haven't had sex for more than 8 days, Ted and Alexis. I might have been in the wrong frame of mind when I watched it. I found this a very horny episode.
But they have made a lot of sexual jokes, and Jocelyn isn't. Yeah. Most of the time when you do that, the woman makes like a, oh, you kind of face, but she doesn't. She's smiling big. Like when they talk about, oh, that's our night to do like strip whatever, she goes with it. She's like, I can't wait, or like whatever. You know, like she doesn't shy away from it. And I think that's sexy.
Nope. Nor does she blush. Nope. Nor does she look abashed for it. She is game to go. She is freaking
That's sheets. That's always sexy though. That part where you don't shy away from it. I think that's everything.
I think that's what I'm picking up on. I mean, she's an attractive woman, but I think it's her attitude for sure. I find myself like staring at her a little bit longer than I probably should when I'm watching the show. Yeah.
You have like crush on her, huh?
I think I have a little crush on Jocelyn shit. I do. And I got to that sloppy Jocelyn's line. It made me chuckle and it triggered me a little bit. I was like, I would definitely be down for some sloppy Jocelyn's. I don't know.
Jeez. Good night. That's crazy.
Good night, nurse. Anyway, so I want to ask you, because this is something you and I have talked a lot about this online, like offline, but I love quotes in shows. I love any show. I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, which I think you follow me on Twitter.
Or our listeners. I hope our listeners
I hope you do.
Too.
At Pop Culture View, because of the limit on characters. Anyway, I do like a West Wing quote of the day. I'm like on day 70-something by the time this comes out. Anyway, I love quotes of shows. So I have to ask you, in a show like Schitt's Creek, Do you find yourself thinking about certain quotes every episode that just either made you laugh or made you think or just something that you found was memorable?
Yes, 150%. There are so many lines in this show that I like try to will myself to remember because I'm like, man, I wish I would have said that in a situation like that. And like,
do you have any you want to share? I want to know what you thought. From
it's sometimes they're just so small and it's just funny in the moment. So like when David gets called in the interview and he mistakenly believes that means he was chosen and he goes, fuck yes. Like that just cracked me up. Like it was a small moment, but it made me laugh. I think when Carol then retorts and is like, I think it's best you wait in the hall. Like just small little like moments like that are not necessarily particularly witty, but they are performed in a way that just like makes me laugh, you know? And he's like, I'm taking the peanuts, Carol.
And his sick line.
Oh, because again, shit. When he was like, sick.
So because he's performing it with his whole body.
Yeah, and he looks at his dad and he like does this whole thing like, oh, it's very funny.
Their line delivery, they do so much with like even like the simplest
things. No. So you know what's another part?
Yeah.
When Stevie gets the job and they're like back at the apartment and she's trying to talk to him about like, just admit that I that I won. And then they're going back and forth and she's like, okay, leave. And he goes, no. And he drinks out of the bottle and does that thing like where he just like runs the wine through his teeth. Fucking hilarious. It's not exactly a one-liner, but just saying no and saying no like that made it like a one-liner for me. I want to say no to someone. I want someone to tell me to leave and I want to say no and I want to grab a bottle of alcohol and drink it and do that through my teeth. Like I want to do all of that. I'm gonna have to pick a fight with someone just in order to do that.
All right. Well, you know, I'm sure you'll have an opportunity at some point in the future. And if you do, tell us.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm coming back here. Confessional. Shit's confessional.
Oh my God. Shit's confessional. That's our after show. We're going to start a podcast after show.
That's right. We'll be serving sloppy Jocelyn's. I can't even. Now I'm going to start sending you like Jocelyn pictures.
Please do. She's
very pretty in real life. Like the way they style her in the show is like yuck. But in the, you know, in real life, she's pretty.
There's an episode and this goes towards, you know, I have no problem with yoga pants and yoga clothes. I'm all about it. The episode where David is having his panic attack and he gets paired with Jocelyn.
Oh, yeah.
Like when he is on her back and he falls asleep, the pose that she's in, I'm not going to say it didn't work for me because it definitely did.
Wow. So anyway. So your love of her goes back like long time.
Yeah, I just rewatched the whole show recently, and I think that's where, much like a blossoming young man, I feel like I've had this awakening where I've probably always known it to be true, but it's recently like I can say it out loud. I think I have a crush on Jocelyn Shipp.
Wow. Well, that's exciting for you.
I'm really excited about this. Do you know
so her real name is Jennifer Robertson. I think you might have to figure out if she's married. I'm going to look her up. I'm going to find out right now. I'm looking.
But she's married in the show. And I think, I don't know that I am attracted to Jennifer Robertson. I think I am attracted to.
Oh, is this one of those things? This is the John Hamm syndrome?
I would hope so. No, it's not the John Hamm
syndrome. No, yes, it is. Where you totally fuck Jocelyn. Oh, well, for you. And I totally fuck Don Draper. But I don't want to fuck Hamm.
Oh, no, I would totally fuck John Hamm in real life.
I know you want John Hamm, but that's just like, you know, come on, you.
That's why I'm saying it's not my John Hamm situation. I don't know Jennifer Robertson in real life, but her sloppy Jocelyn's, though, got me going. So anyway, all of the David stuff, and I really liked a lot of the Larry Ayer conversation in the interview, just the way he was interacting. When he solves the problem in their mock document, like the mock situation, that she gives that Carol gives him on the plane. Her line is complimentary is not in our corporate vocabulary. Made me laugh my ass off because that is the most true statement maybe ever uttered.
That's
on TV.
Really funny.
And if anyone has flown recently, you know that is a true statement.
See, and the part that cracked me up, the one word that cracked me up of that back and forth is when he said thrice. I have shushed her thrice. That like did it for me. I was like, oh. That was super funny.
I think I had a quote from each of the sections of the show. I think my favorite Alexis quote from this episode was when she's talking to Twyla and they get into that conversation about bad signs and bad omens, which Twyla is always going to trump you.
Yes.
If she hasn't experienced it herself, her life is just full of misery. But Alexis says to her, the slowest animal on earth escaped from me. That can't be a good sign. But like, that's some self-awareness from Alexis that I think we all have to encourage. And, you know, is always a little surprising when she has that kind of self-awareness.
Very true. She has grown. Yeah. She has changed so much.
They all have, except for one.
You're so, I think we need to, I think Moira has to stick around like that because she.
No, she is. She fills a role. That,
yeah. She provides the yin to the yang, you know, if everyone just changed, I think it would seem like a sappy show. You know, you like, you need her like edginess still.
She is definitely a needed role as the person who likes a good story arc and likes a good like character evolution. Like one of the things I like about Schitt's Creek is that the characters have changed. They don't reset every week. They are different people now than they were 5 seasons ago or 6 seasons ago. But she definitely fills a role. But I would love to see character growth from her. Like we saw a little bit, like I think I mentioned this last week. You know, we saw a little bit with her and Stevie where she took on like a mentor role. I wish, kind of like you suggested, that you hope maybe she would start like a community theater. She could be a narcissist and a above it all person running a community theater, but it would show like growth. She's not accepted Schitt's Creek
That's
as her
the
home.
Whole
like,
thing, some people yeah.
Some people haven't accepted Jesus Christ as their savior, and she has not accepted Schitt's Creek as her home. And it is, girl. It is.
That's amazing. Well, on that note, thank you guys so much for listening to us.
Definitely check us out on podclubhouse.com, where you can catch all of our episodes of Schitt's Creek and all of the other content that we have. You're also available to download on all of your podcast networks, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you may listen. Please leave us a review, rate, and subscribe. And I am Mike from PopCultureReview.com.
This is Caroline from Daily Review. Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good night. Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at PodClubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.